anxious to step through the gate again, Major?
Yes, I am.
We all are.
Would you like us to bring back anything special?
No, thanks.
Groceries, new outfit, flatware?
No. Just yourselves in one piece, please. Dial it up. You're safe.
Welcome to the Jumping Puddles podcast. Be sure to listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and or YouTube. And follow us at Jumping Puddles Podcast on Tumblr and Instagram, and Jumping Putt Pod on Twitter. Hi, I'm American Sam, and with me are my fellow co-hosts, Tor and Ash.
Hey.
Hi.
Yay. Okay. With very little time before a group of Wraith Hive ships get to Atlantis, the team searches for a place to flee and a way to destroy the city. Meanwhile, Rodney leads a team to try and activate the Ancients' orbital weapons platform, which may be their only hope.
Ooh.
Dun, 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 dun.
Tor! I never remember which is which!
Why did we start doing oohs?
At the end!
We sometimes,
yeah, at we the sometimes next do oohs at the end!
Oh!
God damn it!
We are never gonna get this. Season 5, and we're still gonna be messing this up.
Oh, man.
Guys, we made it. We made it to the episode where Taylor gets to punch Bates.
Yeah, let's just get right into it.
Yes, please.
That was amazing. Don't we all wish we could have done that? Leapt through the screen and punched Bates ourselves.
So much, so much.
Sorry, really quick. This is so funny. I thought you were going to say something like sentimental, like, guys, we made it to the end of the season, our first season of the podcast. And I was like, oh my God, we're going to get sentimental. And you were like, no, Taylor punches Bates this episode. And I was like, oh shit, yeah.
I've been waiting the whole season for this, okay? Since Suspicion.
Yeah, no, it's been a long time coming. She really, it was like a good punch, too. It was like a, I feel like she almost got her elbow in there a little bit, too. Like
she did, like, yeah. It was definitely, like, you can see that she, it's not the first time she's doing that. And she probably thought about it before. Like, it's some part of her brain. She was like, okay, if I ever get to him, this is how I'm going to do it. And they were so ready to fight, like, both of them. Like, first, obviously, she got to throw a punch, but he was so ready to fight back. And only through John holding her back, and I think Forge held back Bates. it didn't escalate completely.
I kind of like that. One, that she ran him down in the hallway after the mission. She was on a mission, all right, to punch him. But also, it's kind of nice to see the female character in a sort of hot-headed situation. We often get, the female character having to calm or, like, quote-unquote nurture the male character from having, like, some sort of rage moment. And so it was nice for Taylor to get her time to do that.
Yeah, I love it when women get angry.
Yes.
It's just, I'm here for it. It's so good to see. Just, like, especially, like, in the probably 90s, 80s, 90s, and maybe also early 2000s, to get angry is still something that a lot of people don't like to see. And, yeah, her being allowed to express that. And I think, yeah, and also showing off what she's capable of when she's angry is just, it's, yeah, really good to see.
Oh, yeah. So well said. Exactly. I think I said this last podcast anyways, too. But I think Taylor is so funny when she's mad and scary. Like, she's actually terrifying. Like, it's not really funny. Let me just, like, this 5'4" bitch is going to kick your ass, sir. Like, your military ass. Like, there's some moments where she's, like, you know, like, glaring this episode. I'm just like, Taylor's the scariest person on the base. Like, she could kill you in many different ways, I'm sure. Like, you know, way faster than, a Marine or, like, a military guy could. Like, she's resourceful. She hates you, she will find a way.
Yeah, and they believe that of her too. Like, everyone on base, like, thought she was capable of punching Bates into a coma. Like, they were not shocked that it could have been her.
Oh my gosh, yeah, you're right.
Like, yeah, they were like, no, this 5'4" bitch can do it. Like, she...
But, and I love that, going off what you said earlier, Tor, too, that, like, she is kind of put in, like, that kind of, like, mom of the friend group, kind of, like, you know, we always joke, like, oh, she's the only one with the brain cell, and she's, like, the calm one, the one that does yoga, like... You know, very, like, I love that she can, the duality, she can just be both. Like, I love that, that she can just get angry, too, and also just beat people up.
Heck, yeah. I like that she has a breaking point. Like, there is a tipping point.
Yeah.
You don't want to push her. And we see that later on in the series, too, so.
Look at Michael falling off building.
That is a scene that has burned itself into my brain. I remember the first time watching that scene where she kicks, he's falling, she kicks him down, basically. It's in my brain so hard, so deeply ingrained. It will stay there forever. I will forever have that shot of Taylor standing on that building in my head, and I'm very thankful for that.
Like the wind.
Yes.
The dark. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
The best thing about it, too, is, like, John's, like, passed out behind her.
damsel, yeah. John, my favorite trope.
I love it. When Taylor has to save her boys.
So good. We got some damsel John in this episode as well. When he got stunned by the wraith. Well. And Taylor and Ford had to come in and save him. Aww.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that moment. Where Taylor's like reassuring him while he's stunned. She's like, it's okay, we got him. I love that. Because I can't imagine how terrifying that would be to get like stunned by one of those things. Like your entire body just freezes up. And he's just like, am I about to die? So I think it's just a cute little moment. I was like, aw, I love her.
Yeah, to be conscious and like not be able to move, oof. Bad time.
Do we know how the wraith stands actually, like, how they work exactly?
Not at all.
Like, what they do to your body?
I want to say that, like, Carson says, like, oh, yeah, we're still researching. Like, we have no idea, like, what the effects are if you get stunned. Like, how it affects your body. I want to say he said that one time. But the thing is, I feel like after this season, they really kind of stop using those wraith stunners. So I feel like we don't really get as much insight into, like, how they work at all, because they just kind of, everyone just switches over to guns. They're like, fuck this, we're in a war.
Yeah, like, shoot to kill, bitch.
Yeah, this ain't no, like, Zat situation over here. She went little running around the little stunners. Like, no. Atlantis pulls out their guns.
With no hesitation.
No hesitation. Everyone gets one, even Rodney and Taylor.
Yeah, I feel like they keep, I thought they forgot about them too, but I feel like they do keep them in some situations still, but yeah.
Yeah.
They're not as, I always figured they were kind of like the Zed guns in SG-1, like the first one kind of, yeah, disables you or knocks you unconscious of something. I'm not like the second shot kills you, but more... in that direction, but...
Yeah, okay, I have a question about that. This is a side note. We don't have to include this in the episode. But, like, why does the Zat have 3 settings? Why are 2 not efficient? Like, why am I gonna shoot... Why do I need him to disappear? Like, he's already dead. Like, what... I gotta send him to the Shadow Realm, too? Like, it's not... So, it's...
You don't have to get rid of the body?
That's fair. If you're, like, on a stealth mission, totally get it. Like, no... Like,
well, they make fun of that all the time, like in Wormhole Extreme and in the episode 200. They're always like, oh yeah, like one, like, you know, blast, you know, the third one disintegrates you, and they're always like, but that's so stupid. So I feel like they really regret adding that little extra rule, because they're always like, that's so dumb. And like, they never use it, mm-hmm. I feel like. Maybe they use it like a few times, but I feel like they're never like, yeah, I just zatted the guy 3 times and he disintegrated, and there's just like nothing there. Like, It's funny. They really were like, this is a mistake.
Yeah, no, I was wondering what do you guys think about how he handled the scene with Taylor and Bates?
Okay, my feelings are complicated because I feel like John is very much a don't give him a reason kind of person. So the line that really gets me is Taylor's like, did you hear what he said about me? And John says, I don't care what he said. He says a lot of things. That line was interesting to me. And I have read a couple of the Stargate novels. One of them, I think it was in Reliquary. Bates kind of, like, shit-talks John to his face a lot. And he says things that can get John in trouble. Particularly in that book, he was like, he makes some throwaway comment about someone on John's team being his special friend. And in John's narration, he, like, mentions that he doesn't know if he was referring to Taylor or Rodney when he mentions that about the special friend. And so this idea that, you know, he's kind of digging to get a reaction from John so that he can, like, get dirt on him. Either he's fooling around with Taylor, which is not good, or he's fooling around with Rodney, which with the whole don't ask, don't tell thing in that era of time was pretty yikes that you're trying to get that kind of dirt on your superior officer. So I feel like his, in the context of that, I'm thinking him saying, like, he says a lot of things is like, he says things about me, like, he says things about, like, you can't be reactionary because it's gonna come back to bite you, which it kind of did in this episode because they thought that she beat him into a coma. At the same time, I feel like he could have said it in a nicer way. Like, he could have been like, you know, I know he's an asshole, like, whatever. But he can't really say that, I guess, in his position. I don't know. It's tough.
Wait, can you guys explain, like, what exactly... what is the part that you're not, or like, yeah, because I'm a little confused, because I don't know if I remember anything jumping out at me, like, in that particular scene. So, like, what part are you, like, talking about exactly? Like, did anything, like, what bothered you, if it bothered you about it?
So the scene is directly after Taylor punches Bates, and John is kind of, he's telling Bates to walk away. And he kind of snaps at Taylor for having punched Bates. And what bothered me about it, that he didn't defend Bates, but yeah, he was kind of, to me, it felt like he didn't take it serious what Bates was saying. And it's not the first time that Bates is being disrespectful towards Taylor, and he's especially disrespectful in this case because he's he's just insulting her to her face. And what bothered me is that we got to see John's reaction to Taylor telling her that just to leave it, not to listen to him, to ignore it more or less. And I was like, that's... it felt... maybe it bothered me that we never got to see the other side of it. Like, we only saw John talking to Taylor and being pissed at her for punching Bates. And we didn't see him talking to Bates later. So I feel like there was kind of an imbalance. And to me, it felt like he was... blaming Taylor for escalating the situation, which maybe she did because she did punch him, but he was so... Bates was just being such an asshole and consciously saying the things he said. Like, he was fully aware how hurtful the things he said were, especially to Taylor. And yeah, he kept on doing that throughout the season, we know that. And yeah.
You bring up an interesting point about Bates' culpability in the situation. I feel like, you know, he did have a point at the start of the episode when he was like, listen, we don't know if she's subconsciously, not willingly, feeding information to the Wraith because of her mental connection to them. But what gets me is that he gets satisfaction from hurting her, as we saw from the last episode where he got to stun her, physically, and also, like, verbally, where he insults her to her face. Like, I feel like it's not coming from a good place. Like, he resents her for whatever reason. And so instead of being like, I'm nervous about your powers, like, bringing it in a nice way, he tries to go over her head. He patronizes her about her abilities, basically, something he doesn't know anything about. So, yeah, like, it'd be easier to swallow his worries if he wasn't so smug and gain some sort of satisfaction out of her looking like she's being a double agent.
Ooh, okay. No, I see a lot of, definitely feel like I agree with both your points, you know. I'm just trying to think about it, because I think, okay, so in retrospect, I feel like I definitely kind of agree. I'm, like, kind of in the middle. I feel like, I definitely think, especially considering, like, that this isn't the first time Bates has kind of been, like, antagonistic towards Taylor, I do think he could have maybe, in either in that scene or after, like, been, like, straight up to Bates, like, hey, you're crossing the line, like, I've told you before, like, stop. But I definitely think he could have taken more accountability there, especially as, like, the military leader. But I also, like, I was just trying to think about it, and I was like, I don't know, I feel like this could be just maybe, like, a fault of his, or again, maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but I just feel like, given, like, his past history and, like, his personality, I feel like it makes sense for him to just be like, Taylor, just, like, don't listen, repress it, like, ignore it. Given the fact that, like, he's never been, like, fully, you know, accepted or treated well, per se, in the military. Like, all his superior officers fucking hate him. Like, I'm sure he had to, he dealt with so much shit in Antarctica because he got, like, that black mark on his thing. So I feel like he's the type of guy to just be like, oh, just bury your head in the sand and just, like, take it. Like, deal with it. So I feel like he's that type of guy. But I'm not sure, like, for me, I think the first time watching it, I wasn't as bothered. It wasn't until, like, Ash brought it up that I was like, oh, okay, actually, no, I can definitely see why, you know, that's kind of frustrating that he just kind of went directly to her. So I definitely think, in retrospect, I think he should have, you know, at least, like, reprimanded Bates or kind of, like, put him in his place a little more. Yeah, but I feel like he's also I feel like he's the type of guy to just ignore it. And I feel like he just ignores everything Bates does and says. For his sanity, I feel like episode 2, he was like, I'm over it.
Okay. I have a question, though. Do you think if he were to reprimand Bates more, maybe in that moment or after, it would have hurt Taylor more? And what I mean by that is, like, Bates had already accused John of favoritism, I say in quotation marks, and at the beginning of the episode being like, oh, don't let your personal feelings for Taylor, like, get in the way of command decisions. So was him sort of directing his frustration at Taylor, at the situation, more to either, one, protect himself so he doesn't look like he's, like, favoriting people on his team or, like, whatever, fooling around with someone on his team? Or, two, was it for Taylor's sake to get Bates to, like, lay off and not give him another reason to resent her or whatever the case may be, because she's teacher's pet, quotation marks. I don't know.
I feel like you're onto something there, because, again, I did not clock any of this. I cannot stress this enough. I did not have any issues with the scene. I really was like, okay. But I definitely think that could be, you know, a part of it as well. Especially because I'm thinking about it now, and, like, obviously it's been a while since we watched, like, Suspicion. You know, it's been a few months. But John has, like, reprimanded Bates before, right? Like, he's been like, hey, shut up.
Basically. Like,
yeah. But I feel like I also think that, like, nothing's really worked. you know, and I feel like maybe John's kind of clocked that. Like, it's literally gotten worse, if anything. So I feel like that could maybe be a play. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's not like I know anything about the military. Please know that. I'm just like, but like, what else could he do, you know, like, besides like reprimand him? I mean, like, obviously, like, he could, like, especially at this point, like, in Atlantis, like, they don't have Earth, like, they don't have any contact with, it's not like he can, like, send him back, you know, and get, like, a new command, like, a second, you know, commanding officer. So, I kind of get why he's had to kind of, like, play both sides, because, like Elizabeth said, I think in one of those seasons, like, didn't, like, they have to work together. Like, he's the head of security, like, unless he dies, there's no way, as of right now, to get Bates off this place. So, yeah, I don't know. It's conflicting.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I didn't feel like he was playing both sides. That's, I think that's my issue with it. And, yeah, Bates is head of security. And I don't know if he's the highest military after John. But, yeah, maybe just strip him from that command would have helped. I don't know. But, yeah. You're right, Bates has gotten worse, and I think probably the gift was a reason for that, because with the whole Wraith DNA thing, it definitely made him more suspicious of Taylor, and yeah.
Low-key feel like maybe, like, it's, like, the kind of the seriousness of the situation as well. Like, maybe if it wasn't, like, in such a serious situation, he probably could have, like, spent more time. Like, John could have been like, oh, you know, actually taken Bates aside and been like, hey, like, enough, like, you're doing too much. Or maybe even, like, honestly, I feel like maybe before, like, stripping him of, like, his command and stuff, I feel like they could have easily just been like, okay, we're throwing you in the jail for a day. Like, like, that's could definitely be, like, a punishment they do. But I look, again, I just feel like...
Yeah. And you can cage fight each other.
Yeah. Oh god, we'll talk about Sora in a sec. But I feel like maybe if it wasn't for the fact that, like, they were, like, in such a dire place where, like, they needed everyone to like be on board and stuff, maybe they were like, okay, I have to, you know, like, not show favoritism and, like, try to maintain somewhat of an order, you know, before we all die horribly.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah,
Sora.
Sora's still in the basement remix.
still.
Well, I honestly feel like she died here.
Yeah.
I feel like we mentioned that before. I'm not sure, but yeah, it's possible.
Now that it's confirmed that there was a Wraith just lurking around in the basement.
I'm sure they just, like, fucking, like, forgot about her, or they forgot to feed her one day, and they just went down and they couldn't find her. They're like, oh, she escaped. But no, actually, she died. They're like, oh well, she escaped, like, whatever, it's not our problem anymore. But maybe she does. Or maybe she did escape. I mean, we could really just keep this inside joke going. She's just gonna always just be down there. She finds a man or wife, gets family down there. She's just living her best life in the basement.
I mean, with all the other prisoners.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe she finds an ancient ghost down there. Maybe they bang.
No, we don't go into the ghost banging here, please. That's a Star Trek problem.
Or maybe she befriended a ghost and he helped her ascend. I don't know if she can reach ascension, though. She's kind of a bitch. But, like, maybe she just... I don't know. Either we kill her off or she lives in the basement. I don't know. Whatever you guys want for our
she lives in the basement. I'm for the basement. Okay, I vote for the basement.
Who did he eat then, the Wraith? Because, I mean, how long is... We don't know exactly... Well, no. He got dropped down in Atlantis in Brotherhood, right? Because mm-hmm. That's when the darts came. So, like, he's got to be eating something. How many other prisoners did we have?
That's actually a question I ask myself a lot. How often do Wraith have to eat? Because we talked about that in The Gift, that or in other episodes as well, that the Wraith ships or the Hive ships have to drop out of hyperspace to regenerate, but they also use that time to cull the planets, right? So I guess on the one hand they are taking prisoners to preserve on the ship, but they also, I guess they also have a little snack down there. So yeah, I always thought that Wraith don't have to feed that often, but I mean the Brotherhood wasn't that long ago, wasn't it? Like, is the Brotherhood the episode where they discovered a hive ships?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, so that's like two episodes.
Yeah, I think then in this case it's 2 or 3 weeks until this episode, or even probably more like two, because I think they say in the end of the Brotherhood that the Wraith will be there in like 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah, so I kind of guess, or in my head, I had it that the Wraith just didn't eat for that time, and because he tried to stay hidden. His name is Bob, by the way.
I am sick of John and these damn names. His daddy issues, babe. They gotta get under control. This is embarrassing.
Bob? John, please love yourself. Love yourself more.
You did not fuck a guy named Bob. I'm gonna cry. Sorry to all the Bobs out there.
And he's always making fun of Ford for naming things. But I think it's actually John who has issues.
I agree. Can we touch on that for a second? I think Ford is right. You know, they should have colloquial names for the planets that they visit that are not these M69 whatever. Because who can remember that? Give it like a defining characteristic. I still think Ford's name for that planet was bad. Like, don't call it the waterfall planet, because you can go to another planet and there can be a waterfall on that planet and then you're going to get all kinds of confused. But do name them. That's fun.
Yeah.
Or learn totally their names. Agree. If they have an existing society, you know?
Yes.
Honestly, that's a big beef I have with Stargate as a whole. It's so annoying. You have, like, every franchise, you know, like, Star Wars, you got, like, Coruscant. You have, everyone has names. And I get that, like, the problem is for, you know, Stargate is that it's very much, like, gate, you know, planet of the week type thing. So they can't exactly name every damn planet. But, like, the super important ones, you know, like, stop calling it, like, yeah, P97. Call it fucking, like, you know, Lantica or whatever its full name is. Like, please. Like, I'm sick. Like, I feel like I... Can I name any planets in Stargate? Like, I really don't know if I could.
The last one, the Brotherhood. Dagon? I think. But the only reason I know that...
Those people?
Oh, yeah. Or were they the
Dagonians? Maybe it's a planet too.
I don't know.
I cannot for the life of me. Like, we're just sitting here like, well, he's got a point. Like, none of... It's sad. Like, I want cute planet names. Like, why can't we have, like, you know, our own little version of Coruscant? Where's that?
Or the Janai planet.
Yeah, they really should have gave that a name. Like, really should have.
Like, all the important ones should get names that we'll remember, or that they use in the show often, because they never do, so we're just like,
is there a name? Maybe, but I don't know it, because I don't think anyone said it. Maybe it was in the script, but but not dialogue.
What do they call it? Don't they call it, like, Atlantica or something? Of, like, where Atlantis is? What's the planet that they're on right now?
I think Lantia.
Yeah.
Lantia. Okay, okay.
And then...
Because then they move, and it's the exact same place.
Yeah. I think they call it New Lantia.
I think so, too. And it's so bad. It's so bad.
Very original.
Probably John was the one who named it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. They're so lazy. They were just like, yeah, just put new in front of it. Okay, but John did slap with the puddle jumper name. I'm sorry, Gateship.
Yeah. True. No, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
Sick. Puddle jumper, adorable, iconic. Our brand.
Yes, literally.
Imagine our podcast would be named Gate Shipping or something.
No.
Sorry. No. So
that's the mirror universe, the evil alternate version of it. Okay. I just want to take a little moment to have some fun. We've been having some serious conversations. So I was only looking at Rodney's titties this entire time. Y'all. His blue shirt.
Help.
Do not tell me he didn't look absolutely fucking amazing in that blue shirt. I don't know what was in the water this episode, but like, he looked like, in that opening scene, I was literally just like, the words were just happening, and I was like, okay, you need to go back and hear, listen to what they're saying. Like, I was just staring at him. Like, he looked so good in that damn blue shirt.
Blue is his color, really. It is. I agree. Although, you know, the magenta red jumpsuit sort of hits too, but blue, you can't go wrong with blue.
Cannot go wrong with blue. He looks so good. And honestly, I was looking at John's titties too, because he was wearing that like long sleeve black jacket. I was like, words. Scenes were happening, and I was just like, maybe that's why I missed the whole hallway thing. I was just busy looking at him. I was just like little birds tweeting around me. Like, I was just really here for the vibes.
Oh my gosh. Now I'm just imagining like scientists on some team, and like Rodney is berating them, and they're just like staring chest level. And he's like, my eyes are over here.
Stop. I need that right now. Oh my God. Yeah, please.
Dead.
Or even John doing that too. Like, John.
Dead.
Rodney's giving some sort of lecture, and John just fully staring at his titties. And John's like, all right, he's like, this is why they changed fits in season two. He was like, we need new outfits. He was like, I can't.
Mission success depends on it.
It was the opposite for Taylor, though. Taylor was like, I need to show my titties now. They switched. Taylor starts wearing the really cute, like purple corset top, and everyone was just like, girl, I'm gonna be in the brown one too.
Yeah, I love the brown one. So cute. Speaking of Rodney's opening speech and blue shirtness, I thought it was so funny when John volunteers to drive them to the satellite, like the helicopter mom that he is. And he's like, I know shit's gonna go wrong if I'm not there, so let me go. And Elizabeth shuts it down so fast. She's like, no, we're not pouring all our personnel into one mission like we always do. We're gonna split the team up a little bit.
I love it. Those are our McShep crumbs for this episode, and I ate them up, bitch. Those were so good. John's face when Elizabeth's like, no, he's like so like, what? Like, he's like, wait. He's like, I'm not being allowed to go with Rodney. And she's like, Miller's gonna go. And I like to think there was this little scene somewhere in between where John like has a little talking to, not like anything serious, but he's just like, Miller, he's just like, you know, do good. And it's just like really awkward, like awkwardly says like, hey, have a good job, like, good luck. And Miller's just like, why the fuck is he doing this right now? He's like, he's never done this to me before. And someone's just like, oh yeah, it's because you're taking Rodney. Like,
oh, our emotionally constipated idiots.
I miss them. I need McShep episode injected into my veins. That's not Trinity. Oh no.
I think that's the next one.
I know. I'm like, oh no. Ooh. Not their divorce. Their public and messy divorce. Like, oh no.
Oh yes. Very public, very messy.
We can cut this part out. But I saw a while ago, oh god, I don't even remember who it was by. Sorry. But there was a really funny Tumblr post where it was like, season one, like McShep, like Rodney, John, engaged or married, happy, in love. And then it's like season two post Trinity, it's like John found Rodney like cheating on him in their bed. Like that's the vibe.
Oh no.
Yeah, those two men have never been together in their lives, and yet they are divorced. That is the vibe.
That opening scene also had a cute Elizabeth Rodney scene, the one where Elizabeth just says, yeah, I have to put undue pressure onto you. And I was like, she probably knows that Rodney works best under pressure. I mean, he tells us that himself, and I love that she plays towards that.
Yes, it's my favorite thing, the Rodney management style that everybody uses. Elizabeth's great at using it, John is great at using it, and in this episode, we see that Grodin uses it too, when they're at the station. Basically, what was the line exactly? I can't remember now. Oh yeah, so basically, Grodin's like, you told me you could fix anything.
Yes!
And Rodney's like, oh damn it, now I have to actually fix it.
Yeah.
And it worked! Using Rodney's pride, the best way to motivate him. Good job.
I love it. I like to think that Elizabeth wrote the handbook within like a week of being on Atlantis, because she just knew him already so well. Because of, the time they spent together on Earth and stuff. And she just, like, passed out these little pamphlets. And it was, like, the Rodney McKay management style. Like, how do they get Rodney to effectively do his work for you?
Appeal to his ego.
Not only does Peter use it, but I feel like Miller kind of uses it as well. I don't know. We're going on a little side note. We're going on a little mini tangent. But we've talked a lot about how we just love, like, the random, like, side characters in Atlantis, you know? Like, Miko, we love a good stack house. We do get a stack house mention this episode, too, which is great.
Hey.
Good Markham. So all these characters. And so I feel like, I don't know, I just really, I love Miller in this episode. He's so funny. I feel like he does a really good job of, like, keeping cool and, like, keeping Rodney, like, kind of, like, grounded. And I think maybe it's just, like, me kind of projecting, because we haven't really seen, like, a lot of military, like, deal with Rodney very nicely. Like, you know, in SG-1, like, everyone's just kind of bullying him, which rightfully so. But I feel like he doesn't really get any respect at times, because, again, he deserves it. But, like, like, it's just nice to see, like, the military kind of, like, treat him well for once. And I don't know, I feel like either Miller had a crush on Rodney, or he was just really nice, or he just really respected him. And either way, I thought it was sweet, because he kept calling Rodney like sir, and when Rodney fell, he picked him up, and he was kind of like just like smiling at like things Rodney was doing in the background. And I was like, oh, this is so cute.
Respect for Rodney.
What's that?
Yeah, I love them, the three of them working together. I think it was a great trio, and yeah, just so much fun, a great dynamic, and rip Grodin, we'll miss you.
Oh, yeah.
I always forget that it happened so early. I always think it's somewhere in season two, but it's here, and I'm sad.
Yeah, it's, I feel like it's even worse, because Rodney wants to go back for him and save him so bad. And Peter is just like, no, don't. And like the tears in his eyes at the end of the episode when he has to tell Elizabeth that he's dead. Oh, the worst. I feel like I'm getting stabbed in the heart.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I think, oh, it makes it worse too because Peter's last words are, I'm sorry.
No! Oh, no.
Why did you have to say that?
No. Oh. Ouch.
I think, obviously, this is like very much like a group episode. You know, like everyone gets kind of like at least a little moment or like at least a little thing. But I think this is such a good episode to show Rodney's arc in season one. And it pains me physically to know where we go on from this with his character. But in this episode, it's so good. And it's such a good, like, moment. Like, you reach the top of a mountain with him. Like, he's there. He's reached his peak, you know? Like, it's the little things. Like, you mentioned, like, the tears in his eyes. When he has to tell Elizabeth that Peter died. Also, like, he's willing to put on the suit again and go outside and reconfigure the whole base so Peter can get out. And he's, like, visibly very distressed when he sees that, like, at the thought of leaving anyone behind. Like, he's very, like, not... He's not okay with that. And I just think it just shows, like, he cares so much for everyone. Like, and I think he honestly really sees, like, the expedition as, like, a family. I know we kind of talk about John kind of seeing very much being, like, the found family kind of dynamic and seeing the team as, like, a replacement for that. But I honestly feel like Rodney kind of sees, like, the whole expedition, not just, like, his immediate friends. I feel like he's the type of guy to be, like, secretly, like, you know, not, like, super deep down, but, you know, like, we're in this together. There's not that many of us here. Like, we have to just take care of each other and look out for each other. It's so, it hurts, but it's so good. And I love this development. That went nowhere.
Damn it. Oh, man, you're so right, Sam. Like, oh, there's so many moments in this episode that showcase it so well. Like, even just the beginning, when he volunteers to go to the satellite himself before anybody is like, oh, Rodney, you should go. No, he just is like, yeah, I'll go and I'll bring so-and-so and so-and-so, like, totally ready to go himself, even when Zelenka tries to talk him out of it. Which, that whole scene was top tier.
That was a roller coaster. Oh my gosh.
It was. Like, Zelenka, first of all, helping him pack was so cute. But also, like, it just shows how much they've grown into, like, this weird antagonistic friendship. The fact that Zelenka was willing to go himself in case anything went wrong because he really believes that Rodney knows the city best and needs to be protected, like, at all costs for the safety and security of the expedition was, like, insane. And I thought it was so cute of him to be worried about him like that. And their little manly handshake of manliness when he leaves is really cute too. And Rodney being like so sure it's gonna be fine. Like, no, we're gonna be okay. Like, don't even worry. Like, he's not even like, oh yeah, maybe you should go. Like, no. Which is totally something you would expect Rodney to say in that situation, but no, he was so cool. And I loved it.
I think Zelenka has to take the course on Rodney management again, because that scene, oh man. It starts out so sweet with Radek saying, yeah, I should go because you're more important, and or he says something like that, and it's so sweet. He's so worried, and then Rodney is doing his Rodney thing and being a little asshole, and kind of making fun of what, not making fun, but he's like taking what Radek said as like a compliment and turning it into bitchy, and it was like, man, this man was trying to be really nice to you, and he was having a moment and ruining it completely, and Radek completely snaps at him and calls him a little man, which is so funny to me. I think it, oh. And then they fight for a bit, and then, yeah, we get to the manly man handshake. And I think in that moment, Tor, you said that Rodney doesn't, is so sure of himself. But I think in that moment, he has like a little bit of doubt, or maybe so, yeah, take care of my city. He calls Atlantis his city. Yeah, so I feel like there was a little bit of doubt that he might not come back, but yeah, it's Rodney, so he thinks his plans always work.
I know, I love when he said, take care of my city. Like, I like the propriety there. Because I feel like we always say John is the, like, the golden boy, the prodigal son of Atlantis, but I think Rodney and Zelenka as a duo, really should be Atlantis's favorites because they do so much for her on the daily and like in situations like this.
Oh yeah. I love their dynamics so much. Oh, it's just giving like for real, like they're work married. They're so work married. It's so cute. Like, it's so canon that they're just married. I don't remember really much about season two. So I'm excited to kind of rewatch it, you know, with you guys, with like the new lens of like the podcast, a little analytical signs are turned on. Because I feel like this is season two is kind of when it starts to change a little bit. But anyways, I think the main difference from season one and particularly like the later seasons for sure is that, again, you can have that really sweet moment where like Rodney, you know, kind of like, you know, they're doing like their usual push and pull kind of relationship. But he also stops and, like, has a little moment with Zelenka. Like, a serious moment with Zelenka. And it's like, oh my god, in season one? Like, it's not, like, Power of Rodney, where he's, like, for sure about to die. Like, there's, like, you know, until, like, the very last minute where, you know, he gets surprised. It's like, maybe he might die, maybe not. But even then, he still has a really sweet moment with Zelenka. And, you know, again, I don't remember season two, so maybe I could be wrong. Maybe it's season three when he starts to change. I really don't know. But at least in this season, I feel like we get a balanced McKay where he can be sassy, he can be funny, he can be very goofy, he can be, you know, physicality, everything involved in there. But he can also turn it and just be really serious.
Well said.
Mm-hmm.
I love how much Zelenka has to do in this episode.
Yeah, he's running around all over the place.
Right? He's everywhere. He's in the beginning, and then the whole time he's on Atlantis, and, he really makes me so sad for Ford, but he did have more to do in the first season than Ford, right?
I agree.
I feel like he had more scenes. But yeah, it's just... I think he's probably one of the reasons why I forget sometimes that Ford is on the main team. I love Zelenka, but I just feel so bad for Ford all the time. Yeah, no, I love Zelenka being everywhere and having a few scenes with Elizabeth and... Zelenka shows Elizabeth the simulation of being destroyed, like with the self-destruct, and Elizabeth is so sad seeing just thinking of destroying Atlantis is just hurting her so much because she's so in love with the city, and I loved what they did the whole time when while John and Ford were investigating and Rodney and his team were off on the satellite. I just loved all the Elizabeth and Zelenka scenes.
Me too. They are so cute. I love them. And it makes the exposition really interesting too when it's a dialogue between those two. Because I like Zelenka being the idea man, the guy who knows the city intimately, and like the guy that Elizabeth can trust to go to and be like, can you get this done? Like, what's realistic? Like, give me some ideas. Yeah, I think it's great. I also thought it was super interesting in general, the fact that the Wraith could potentially use debris from the destruction of the city to, like, go to Earth anyway. Like, either by gaining access to the database, or by using parts of the city to improve their engines. That was really interesting to me. That they're, like, that intelligent of a species that they could just do that.
I thought they were going to, if the debris is big enough, they could just recreate a star drive and use that. But maybe they were going to integrate it into their own technology. That would be interesting.
Yeah, because their hyperdrive is crappy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I think it's the organic, that their ships are powered organic and it just can't withstand hyperdrive.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
For that long, at least, yeah.
Huh.
I don't know, I kind of feel like bullying them, though. Like, I don't feel like... even if they managed, per se, to get, like, you know, the technology to, like, power the hyperdrive, I am sure these bitches would take, the wrong left turn and end up in a different galaxy. Like, I don't know, are we sure they could find their way to Milky Way? Are we sure? Like, okay, maybe season one Wraiths can. Season five Wraiths, okay. Those guys are not making it to Earth. They're gonna go to, like, the 200 million miles away galaxy where universe is.
Oh, no. Oh.
Do you think that if the Wraith were able and they got the technology and they went to Earth and the Milky Way galaxy, that they would ever return to Pegasus? Or do you think they would just leave?
Okay. Two answers to this. One is, in the actual canon of the show, I think they would have just left. I think they would have just chilled out in the Milky Way because they have unlimited resources over there. Like, all these people for real are basically untouched. I mean, we don't know how, I mean, that kind of dives into this whole other, you know, do they like eating humans when the golds are in them? Is it extra protein? how does that go down? Have they met the gold? Like, do they know? Like, can they eat? Like, does it not match with their physiology? Can they even eat people with gold? Anyways, that's the first one, right? However, in our canon, we have to, like, name our version of Atlantis, I feel like. Our little canon version of Atlantis. Because we're going to reference that a lot, I think. But in our canon, I feel like maybe they would have gone back. Like, maybe, like, to the report, like, to the queens, the Council of Queens, and maybe, like, alerted them, like, hey, we should all move. Let's all go to a new galaxy. Like, let's get a new house, new cars. Like, I feel like that's what those Wraith would have done. Like, they would have, like, definitely, like, taken, like, Earth and taken some, like, planets, but I don't think they would have stayed there for that long. I think they would have been like, all right, we got to go and let everyone know to move on over.
Yeah, and even canonically, they have different factions, right? Like, there are some Wraith that, like, don't like each other, so maybe they'll just, like, stay on opposite galaxies.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, maybe, like, the queens will be like, okay, like, these people go here, you guys go this way, we'll go this way, we'll go this way. Like, and we'll stay here on the homeworld and delegate from here, but you guys will all just go to different places.
And the reason I asked was because I thought that argument between Holling and Elizabeth was very interesting, theologically, just in general. He mentioned to Elizabeth that if she destroys Atlantis, there will be no future for the people of the Pegasus Galaxy. And in my head, I was immediately like, if she doesn't destroy Atlantis and the Wraith get all this technology, like, who do you think they're gonna kill first? Like, the people, they're gonna be even more powerful and more unstoppable than they were before. So I don't think he was in the right in that conversation at all. And I appreciate, while I appreciate his sort of, his piousness, not necessarily for the ancients, but just like, culturally, I suppose, I much prefer Elizabeth's, we have to take fate into our own hands and protect ourselves and be proactive instead of kind of just waiting for somebody to come and save us, which is why Elizabeth is, again, the best leader.
No argument for me that Elizabeth is the best leader. Yeah, I think that was the base of his argument, that he believed that the ancients would come back and save them. And yeah, it's kind of hard to watch from my perspective. not believing in any kind of God. And so it's hard to, for me, it's hard to understand where he's coming from. And it's hard to understand for me that someone has so much faith into something that they would base their whole fate on it. And it made me wonder if Atlantis is like a church for but it probably is like a holy place for the Athosians or all those people who believe in the ancients. And yeah, I tried to argue it with, in my head, I argued with Harling that Atlantis is nothing if it's not inhabited. Like, it didn't do anything for the past 10,000 years. And now that it's inhabited again, not by the ancients, they can use its her powers and abilities and knowledge and... they can't just leave it. I don't want to destroy it either, but I also don't want the Wraith to have it. So I'm totally with Elizabeth on that. Surprise.
I mean, I feel like, is it a surprise that any of us are on Team Elizabeth? Like, especially for this argument when it's, you know, against, not necessarily against the ancients, but, you know, they play such a big part in it. I feel like it's so sickening to watch this, like, clip of Harling and Elizabeth. Because, you know, we know who the ancients are. Like, you know, they aren't these mythical, cool people that saved the Pegasus Galaxy. They're idiots that kept fucking up and didn't bother to stay in every galaxy they messed up. And who cares if they were, like, the forefathers of, like, how many generations and how many cultures and civilizations? It doesn't matter. They were not good people. And every time they were given an opportunity to show that they were worthy of those, like, worshippers, they literally failed. They were never, like, they're never worthy. So it's just really, honestly, it's sickening and it's just really scary to kind of see how, you know, how much of, like, the ancient worshiper and just, like, the culture has just really delved deep and just truly have, like, believed for so many generations that the ancients are, like, gods. When they aren't, they aren't. And it's just, it's really sad as well because, like, they won't ever... be free, I think, of that belief. And it kind of goes into there's so many tangents I could go on here. but, like, you know, we'll see it eventually in season 3 when those quote unquote ancients come back and take the city and they just kick out the Athosians and everyone. And it's just like, you know, there's no follow up on that though, really. Like, or at least I don't remember if there is, but like, How do the Thosians react to that? Are they okay? Do they fully like? I honestly believe that like they were already too far gone enough that I think they might have been like, oh, this is all part of their plan. Or they would have maybe tried to be like, well, those aren't really the ancients. Like, those are like some other people who, like, you know, like, I don't know. I feel like there's so much that could have gone here. And especially like relating it back to Taela as well, you know, like she was raised her whole life in this religion. And I feel like, unfortunately, we never get to see, you know, how she progresses and how she kind of does she get rid of, I mean, clearly she gets rid of. You know, that sort of like, I use the word conditioning, but like she gets rid of those beliefs, but we never see her journey and how and if she struggles with it. Like, I don't know. So there's just a lot here that I think you can kind of delve into with this scene. And at the end of the day, though, yeah, it's just all the words I use. Scary, sad, sick. I hate the ancients. This is so mean. This is just so mean.
It is mean, and I think you're right. I think barring an ancient coming down to the Athosians and being like, yeah, we're not all that you think we are. Most of us are not, and you shouldn't be so pious, like you shouldn't care so much about us. Like, I think barring that, they would just keep on believing the same way that they always have. And I think it's hard because for them, this is their only hope, sort of in a hopeless situation. And so, yeah, it's just a rock and a hard place, really.
Okay, this might be a bit of a controversial question, maybe, but who do you think is kind of more misguided? The people who worship the ancients or those who worship the Wraith?
Oh, very interesting.
Ah, amazing question.
Oof.
You know, hold on. Give me a second, really, to hold on. Okay. I think I have my answer. It's not fully formulated. And so I feel like, you know, this would be a fun question to bring up as we go on in the series, especially when we meet the Wraith worshippers. But I still think, as much as I hate the ancients, I'm gonna defend them. I still think it hurts to say it. I honestly still think that the Wraith worshippers are misguided, a lot more than the ancient worshippers. Because I think, at least with the ancients, like, I don't want to say I can see why everyone would worship them, but like, you know, at least there's like, I don't want to say reasons either, but you know, like, you know what I'm getting at, right? There's like, you know, they had all this technology, they did all these crazy things, they ascended into like literal a different dimension, basically. Like, they did all these amazing things, and at the end of the day, were they good people? No. Did they make a lot of mistakes? No. But at least, like, I mean, yes, they made a lot of mistakes, yes. But at least they weren't like, I would say it was more negligence and pride and arrogance instead of just like pure deceit, which I think is more of the Wraith. Although you can kind of get into it because then, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, well, the ancients made the Wraith. So who's really, you know, it kind of goes into this whole thing. But I just feel like Wraith worshippers, on the other hand, like the Wraith are actively killing people. Regardless of like whether or not it's in their, you know, physiology, it's at the end of the day, it's just, you know, they're doing it and they do it to so many people. Like, you know, if they didn't want to, maybe there could have been a way. Like, maybe they just hibernate. Maybe you leave a certain Wraith to work on a cure. He really felt like that, but I honestly think that the Wraith just kind of see humans as like cows. So, and yeah, and I think, yeah, not to get super into it further, but I also think it's just like you're watching like the Wraith like literally murder like villages upon villages, you know, like kids, men, women, children, like fully. And so I think you're way more misguided if you worship them for like the off chance of being like young forever. Like that's just really, you're just really stupid.
Yeah, and there's an, now that you mention it, there's an underlying tone of selfishness to that belief, right? Or sort of ulterior motive, like you will worship them because they promised you this like eternal life, like yay, I'll live forever, I don't care if you do bad things to other people as long as I get to reap the benefits and like be alive forever, versus, you know, with the ancients, it's like they kind of tried to help, I guess. And like the Thosians believe in them as like a beacon of hope for everybody, and less of a like, you're gonna come and save me specifically from the Wraith. So, yeah.
I guess I have to say something too now, right? To be honest, I haven't quite settled yet on my decision. I agree with everything that you said. I think the ancients, they didn't set out to be gods, I guess. When did they start, by the way? Or did they actually make people believe in them, or did it just happen somehow?
Well, that's another, I mean, again, this is, we are going so off.
Yeah.
Sorry. But no. It's an amazing question. Like, this is a lot of fun. It's just like, oh my God. But you know, that kind of goes into the whole, that's a great question, because again, I don't think we know. I feel like it kind of just depends on everyone's interpretation. But I think it makes it more interesting, honestly, if they started out as like genuinely good people. And then over time, when everyone started worshiping them, they were like, all right, well, we can't say no. And then they just descended kind of, and eventually just with each generation got worse and worse. Because you have a good point, honestly. Like they created the Wraith. Okay, so everything is, this is all their fault. based off just their negligence. And then also, it's not like they did anything to, like, from what we've seen so far, they didn't tell, like, the people of the Pegasus, oh, you have to stop worshiping us, like, we're actually not gods. Like, instead, they just reinforced it. Like, they literally they weaponized their beliefs. We see it in Brotherhood. Like, when they gave those people the ZPM, they're like, oh, keep it hidden for us, like, we'll come back for it. And then, you know, the team spends the whole episode trying to get it, and then they do find it, and it's like, oh my God, this could save us. And then no, because of the fucking ancients and their stupid, like, rules and shit, they were like, oh, save it for us when we get back. So Atlantis is stuck without a ZPM because the people take it back, and they're like, well, you're not real agents. So again, they're just like, literally, it's a wheel. They literally punish their descendants. You know, great, 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 great. But because they're stupid, like all their mistakes, like Atlantis is having to clean up all their mistakes, and it's all just coming back to them. So yeah, that's a great point. It's a really great point.
Yeah, yeah. And just to come back to my argument again, how did the Wraith religion start? Did the Wraith started themselves, or did some people just? Oh, what did the Wraith get from it, basically? I guess that's my question. Because they give their believers immortality or something in that direction. But yeah, what did they get from it?
I wanna say something really, just again, we don't canonically know, right? We really don't know. They don't bother to go into depth. But I feel like it would be honestly really interesting if the Wraith, maybe the Wraith weren't the ones who started it. I feel like I can't see them being like, hey, human, worship me. But I also kind of feel like it would kind of parallel the ancients if humans started it first and the Wraith kind of went along with it. And I think it'd be really interesting if the Wraith kept that belief to those like worship Wraith worshippers as a way to kind of like, I don't, I mean, maybe not like spite, but as a way to like see like, hey, look, we're like the, we're better than the Asians though, because we're actually giving our worshippers something in return. Like, I can see them having like a superiority complex with the ancients as well, and trying to be better than like their makers and shit.
Yeah, you bring an interesting point that it's like human started, because I feel like maybe Wraith worship began as a sort of resentment towards the ancients, like your absent father, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you're not here for me, you're not doing anything for me, so, and these people are like, they have all these things, so like, they're the winning side, so let me worship them and see what I can get out of that deal instead, sort of dissent amongst ancient believers, I guess. I think that would be an interesting origin, for sure.
I don't really have anything more to say about that. I just, sorry, I didn't expect this to be so long, but I was just, yeah, that question just came to me and I thought it was, might be interesting, so yeah, thanks.
That was so much fun.
Speaking of Pegasus Galaxy religion, there's one fic that I really enjoy. It's Jen, mostly focused on Taela and Rodney, and it's called Pilgrim's Progress. And it kind of dives into the idea of religion in the Pegasus Galaxy, not so much having to do with the ancients or the Wraith, but if anybody is sort of interested in that theological argument and where characters might stand theoretically in that theological argument, I recommend everybody read it. It's a good read.
Yes, please. We'll link it in the show notes for sure.
Yes. I'll put it there so I don't forget.
yes, thank you as well. This is a random side note, though. We could also just cut this. I just want to say it a long time ago, but we just went on 20,000 different tangents, so there was just no point in time where I could say it. Anyways, back to our canon version, our own version of Atlantis that I love and hold so dear to my heart now. But I was thinking, wouldn't it be so fun if, like, the ancients had, like, because when Ash brought up the idea of, like, Atlantis kind of being, like, a church, I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. Like, what if, like, the ancients had, like, a day, like, one day a year where they, like, opened up the gates, you know, the waterfalls and our version of the pretty Atlantis, and they, like, let people kind of make a pilgrimage into the city.
Ooh, that is cool.
Right? And then I was thinking, like, it would be so interesting, too, because if that, you know, tradition and belief had kind of carried, you know, out throughout the years while they were, like, waiting for Atlantis to come back, like, what if when Atlantis comes back, they're like, hey, guys, it's time to show up, and the crew's just like, wait, what? Like, like, that would just be a really great... that would just open up a whole can of worms, because, you know, then it's like, well, do the expedition play into, do they fall into the same traps that the ancients did and try to, like, you know, not maybe act like gods, but, like, or do you just let them believe that you guys really are, like, the big descendants of the ancients? Like, that can just be a whole interesting thing we should delve into some other time.
Oh, yeah, and... different characters' takes on what they should do. It'd be super, super interesting. And also, just because I feel like we had not gotten it enough, like, we could get a taste of Pegasus culture. And, like, what did that look like when they visited the ancients? And that would have been super fun to see.
And it would be a very ancient thing to have just one day in a year. We don't know how long a year is on Atlantia. But yeah, to have 1 year for other people to be allowed to come and visit.
Extremely so.
It's so on brand for that, for real.
Speaking of things that we wanted and didn't get, or, you know, should happen in our Atlantis, what the fuck? They name dropped the fact that they went to a planet with a dinosaur on it. And one, they didn't show us the dinosaur or the team on the planet with the dinosaur. And two, they never went back there. We never got to see any more dinosaur action. I'm very offended. I'm very sad. I think the team deserves to have fun with dinosaurs.
Yes. Yeah, maybe not as an alpha set. Oh my gosh. They make it a Jurassic Park. It's like an adventure. Like, it's like an adventure park or something.
See the on their dumb asses. I can see the military being like, all right, $10 if you like spend more than 20 minutes alive, like in the planet. Or like they just start betting like random shit, like $100 if you can bring back like a little velociraptor or some shit alive. Like, they're trying to just get some baby. Oh my gosh. I just imagine like little like baby velociraptors just flying around our version of Atlantis. Like birds and stuff. Like, it's so pretty. Oh. I mean, they can be friendly.
For one, something in Pegasus is friendly.
Really quick, want to mention the end. I love when John goes just balls to the wall feral for his team. He goes full Slytherin. He goes full Dark John. He says, I don't give a fuck. He said, you heard Taylor? It's funny how he can do it to a wraith, and yet he's very cautious with Bates. But for a wraith, he was like, yanks it out Glock. Fully is shooting him. Ford is literally like, hey, maybe you should stop. And John's like, no. Like, I love when he goes full dark mode. And honestly, like, John never got that breaking point episode. And that, I think that would have been that breaking point episode. It was his weakness for his team. But interesting. But I love seeing it here, especially so early on, seeing how quick and how dark he can be. Just teasing his little backstory and stuff.
I was just, every time we cut to the part where John is in the brig with the wraith, I was just like, what the fuck, John? Literally, what the fuck are you doing? Do they have rules for prisoners on Atlantis?
No.
At all. Even if they are wraith. I know they are wraith. And it's hard to kind of establish some kind of, I mean, you can't, can you apply human rights to wraith? Question. That we don't have to go into right now. But still, he's a prisoner, and John just goes ham. he's,
oh my god.
It just goes insane there. Like, what the... I mean, I get it. He is pissed and he wants to get information. But by killing the wraith, he doesn't accomplish anything except maybe satisfying his own need to kill a wraith. But, yeah, when Ford asks if they haven't gone too far, I was like, yes, you have. You have. You definitely have. And John keeps going. He just keeps going in it. Yeah, I had some issues with that scene, or with the way John acted. I thought it was, I don't want to say over the top, but it was weird.
I'm over here kicking my feet and blushing because I love when John goes into his war criminal phase. Feminism has left the building. Yeah, war rights have gone out the door, bitch. He goes feral, and I was like, yay! I love when he goes crazy. Lives it, bestie. Like, oh my gosh, he's... But yeah, no, I mean, obviously, like, serious, on a serious note, with feminism inside my body, I think... Yeah, he can be kind of scary, and it is kind of spooky that... Again, he's the military leader. He's such a loose cannon. Which is, again, the whole therapy comes back into play. He should get some of that.
Yeah. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall to see him, like, after all the dust had settled, trying to explain that to Elizabeth. Like, oh, I tripped and I accidentally pulled the trigger, I don't know how many bullets are in a clip, however many times, and then I reloaded by accident. It just slipped into the chamber and I unloaded the rest of my clip into him by accident. Like, how are you gonna explain killing a potential informant like that? You can't. But I love it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know, there's just something, not that John is goofy, well, he is goofy, but, like, not all the time, but I feel like a lot of John's personality is performative, and I feel like he puts on a lot of airs of, like, I'm really relaxed about this, when really he's not, and so to see the lackadaisicalness melt away and become, yeah, like, murder John, I really enjoy it every time it happens, so... Yeah.
That's our baby girl.
I will yassify baby girlify him.
Yes.
Just 40-year-old man. Forever and ever.
Go. I think he deserves to commit a little murder as a little treat.
I agree. And the dichotomy between, like, the psychopath and the pretty princessness of John Shepherdina is just my favorite. Perfectly beautifully married into one. But speaking of somebody who actually does their job well, Elizabeth, at the end of the episode, where she gives the speech on the citywide comms. Yes, girl. I particularly like the line she says, in the face of an uncertain future, as long as we stay together, we have a chance to stay alive. And I love the togetherness. And I love that she was honest. She wasn't like, we're going to be fine. Don't worry. No. Yeah. Strength of character. Insane.
Yep. I was actually about to bring that up as well. I love her speeches. And I love how they are placed, because she doesn't always give them, but there are a few, but they are always... there's always a reason for them, and yeah, we get one of them here, and yeah, it's amazing. And I also like how it kind of cut back and forth between her and then John and the team in the break of the basement, in the basement or wherever that is, and them just stopping for a moment and...
Sorry, okay, really quick, I'm just going to mention the John thing and then I'll go to Elizabeth. But I think it's so funny because I know we made that joke in an early episode of the pod where we were just talking about our random Ronin, or our random Ronin rants. We talked about how Ronin was the meme of, like, get your fucking dog, bitch, and then it's like, he don't bite. It's like, yes, he do. Okay, well... I think it's so funny because, again, like, the reason why they brought Ronan onto the show was because they were like, okay, John was being too loose of a cannon. They were like, it's not realistic that he would be the military leader. So they had to bring someone else who was more hot-headed and stuff so John could be, like, the mature, I'll pull you back. And so I think it's so funny because in this episode, John is the, Elizabeth's like the, he don't bite. And it's like, what can you do? Like, John is off his leash. John is off his leash. He is feral. Going back to Elizabeth, though, I love her speech. And again, I love how they use the calm. They don't use it enough. I know we went on a whole tangent that one time about all of our radio broadcast fantasies at Atlantis. And I just love to think that everyone on, like, Atlantis Twitter was, like, so happy with her speech. They were like, oh my god, that, like, oh, you're right, guys. We gotta work together. And it was like... Everyone was just clapping and saying, like, oh, yeah, she's the best leader. but, you know, I love her speech so much. And I love when she gets to really, like flex and use her previous skills in like the UN and like treaty stuff, and when she kind of incorporates that into her Atlantis work.
Yeah, she walks the line between being inspiring and being realistic so well. Like, she, yeah, just that. She's somehow she's able to still incite hope, I feel like, in the people she's working with, and not losing, without losing sight of what is happening. And yeah, she's great. Best leader.
Heck yeah.
Okay. Amazing end, as always, to end on Elizabeth praise. But we should switch over to Ash really quick for the Bechdel test.
What?
Yeah.
I was gonna say.
Nope. Fail. Big fail.
We deserved a Taylor Beth moment in this episode, where Taylor or Elizabeth talked to Taylor about her punching Bates.
I'm not gonna get into that now.
We'll talk about that after. Okay. And then we'll switch it over to me for the behind the scenes. So this episode was written and directed by our besties, our good old reliable friends, Martin Garrow and Martin Wood, the unstoppable duo. And so I got a few fun things, I think. And going back to what I mentioned earlier is, unfortunately, though, this is the last mention of Stackhouse we ever get in the series.
Wow.
Yeah. So either he transferred off of Atlantis or he died in the siege. Aww. Which I...
He transferred.
That's not true in our version of Atlantis. Stackhouse is a permanent fixture. But yeah, in the show, this is unfortunately his last match. Also, so side note, but apparently he can canonically speak the Serbian language because the actor was Canadian and Serbian.
Oh,
nice.
That's in his little wiki. Speaking of another character, side character. So Miller is actually mentioned in another episode, the coup d'etat. And we actually see him again in Reunion in season 4.
What?
Bit?
Yeah, so I'm excited to see that because I do not remember him popping up again, but he does. He's also in an SG-1 book and an Atlantis book. So
interesting.
It's wild that he has a lot more presence in the show and the books than Stackhouse. I feel like everyone hears about Mark and Stackhouse. But yeah, Miller pops up. Also, fun little note, on his wiki as well, it suggests that he might be the second highest ranking officer of the original expedition after Sumner died, but they also mention it's a maybe because it depends if Ford has seniority or not.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
I feel like Ford is so young. But yeah. Maybe.
I like to think that he was probably the highest because I don't think Ford has seniority. Ford is a child.
He just made a penis joke.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Another fun little tidbit is that Zelenka's first name is actually mentioned for the first time in this episode.
Hey.
We learned his name is Radek.
Yay! What a cool name. I think it suits him a lot.
Yeah. No, I love it. And speaking of our good old friend, the dinosaur, apparently there actually were plans to sew a dinosaur, like, creature coming through the gate, but it was scrapped for budget.
I knew it. Not enough budget for CGI. We blew all the money on the beautiful Atlantis shots.
Yeah.
Exactly. However, I do want to mention, they do this same joke in Universe, and I want to say, I don't remember if they show the dinosaur. I want to say they do. But they do the same joke in the universe.
Do you remember which episode?
So I don't think they show it. It's towards the end of season one. It's when Chloe, I want to say Matt and Eli as well, them three. They remember they there's an episode in the later season one where they get stranded on a planet. Destiny goes into FTL without them. So they have to run through a bunch of these gates to catch up to Destiny so they can hop onto Destiny. And I think they make that's the episode where they make a joke. They're running through a bunch of these gates and they're like, we just ran through the dinosaur one. Or they're like, we almost died back there. There's like a T-Rex. Yeah, so I think that's where they make that same joke again. But yeah, and the last thing is that the French title is apparently Besieged, and the episode in Russian is called Blockade.
Ooh, I think I like the siege better just because it's more like offensive than defensive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's fun too because this is the first time in the franchise's history that there was a three-parter. They only had two parters in SG-1.
Damn.
Are you sure?
I want to say yes, but I like there could be like, I want to say like yes because it's named like Siege Part 1, 2, 3. Like there might have been episodes that have been like 1, 2 and then like a continuation, but this is definitely the first time they mentioned Siege 1, Part 2, 3.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, that was the Siege Part 1. Thanks for hanging out with us today. And be sure to check out all of our social media accounts for the jumping puddles. And you can also find our personal accounts linked down below with the fic that Tor recommended. And yeah, we hope you had a great time with us. And tune in next week for, not next week, tune in next time for the Siege Part 2.
Ooh.
That was good. That was great, actually. Okay, anyways, bye. Bye.
Bye.
All right, you clowns, listen up. I don't often get a chance to say this, so savor it. Good work, boys and girls.
Let's go home.